passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Time for now in New Japan Pro Wrestling has come to an end. The wish for a bright future. No doubt about it. Two great friends. Wait a minute, what the hell? Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ! No! You absolute son of a bitch!
I told you, Kevin!
How dare you!
Switchblade is always watching! Did Tanahashi, he took his eye off the ball!
Of all times! Of all places! To do this here and now!
Jay White with the biggest statement of his life, ruining this moment.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the February edition of Post Piro Resu. I'm John Pollock, joined by W.H. Park. It's been a while. It's been a month, W.H., and I feel that we have so much to catch up on. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. It's Saturday morning here in Japan right now, and it's a little cold. Not like Toronto, but it's still a little chilly here. Do you want to know what the temperature here is, John?
Yes, give us the update on in Namazu.
In Namazu, it's 2 degrees.
Damn. Here it is. Well, for our friends that prefer Fahrenheit, it is 13 Fahrenheit here in Toronto, which in Celsius is minus 11.
Yeah, I was listening to like you and Wei talk during the week, and you guys are saying minus 36, minus 20, and I've been acclimatized to Japanese winters, so I worry about when I make the inevitable move back to Toronto, like what's going to happen my first winter. I just might die. I really worry about
that. Like, this is an abnormally cold winter, even for Toronto. Like, we usually get hit for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of the year, it's really, really bad. And this was a record amount of snowfall we had this past Monday in Toronto. But we digress. We're going to get hate messages from people that are all complaining about how much colder it is in their part of the world than ours. So we shall move on. We have lots to discuss. We are going to start off on the New Japan front. By the time most of you are listening to this, the first card of the New Beginning shows this weekend in Sapporo should be over with, and we have another one coming up on Sunday. I guess when these lineups were announced, WH, what has stood out for you? And we will go through this card on Sunday, but just overall impressions of kind of the directions you see going coming out of Wrestle Kingdom and into February.
Nothing really stood out. Everything's kind of like what I would expect them to do based on the booking and the notion that, you know, like the Elite were leaving. Kenny's probably not signing. Who knows, like, what his future, like, down the line will be, if he's going to be able to, like, freelance for New Japan while he's signed with, I assume, AEW. You saw that the inevitable push of Jay White to like the top of the card was going to happen. So him challenging Tanahashi is, you know, like, okay, that's going to happen. Whether he beats him or not, we'll see. We can talk about more of that like when we go through that card, though.
Yeah. So looking ahead to Sunday's card, we've got Toa Nare versus Yota Tsuji in the opener, followed by Manabu Nakanishi and Tiger Mask against Shota Umino and Ayato Yoshida. Ren Narita, Hiroshi Tenzan against Takeshi Iizuka and Takuma Chinoku. As Takeshi Iizuka, he's on the his farewell tour. Ryusuke Taguchi, Tomoaki Honma, Toru Yano, and Togi Makabe against the Gorillas of Destiny, Taiji Ishimori, and Yujiro Takahashi. Six-man with Tanahashi, Okada, Yoshihashi against Bad Luck Fale, Jay White, and Chase Owens, keeping Tanahashi and Jay White attached at the hip going into Osaka. Junior heavyweight tag title match, Bushi and Shingo Takagi defending against former champions El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Evil and Sonata against Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. And the main event, the big one, Tetsuya Naito versus Taichi for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, it's a big show. I think it's a lot better than the show in Osaka on the 11th next week.
Yeah, I think that you look at Osaka, it's certainly very... I think Osaka has the most interesting match with the main event of where they can go. But yeah, there's a lot to take from this card that I think has a lot of potential. Beyond the main event, I can't say that is at the top of my list, but that tag title match could be something.
I think that's probably the most intriguing match for me. Like the junior heavyweight tag team title match, I don't see like LIJ losing that. They just beat Kanemaru and Desperado, who had the belts for like close to what, like 10 months, I think. And so I think they're going to keep that. Naito, Taichi, I think is intriguing because like...
Naito has had good matches with Taichi. I mean, they had that really good one last year. So I don't think it's going to be a dud. It's going to be... I think it'll be serviceable. I think it's... I think it'll be a fine main event. I think that those two, they do have chemistry together.
Well, from a booking standpoint, you do have to get that IC belt off of... Naito at some point, because I do think he's the, you know, the inevitable main event of one of the Tokyo Dome cards next January. So at some point he has to lose that belt. I'll say this, I'm not being a huge Taichi fan. Obviously, most people who know me know that, but I will say I'll give him credit for stepping up. I do think it wouldn't be the worst idea if he got the belt for a short term and then lost it to somebody else to elevate that person. So I'm going to predict that Taichi is going to win the IC title tomorrow night. In Sapporo. Wow.
Bold move.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to Osaka, let's start off with the main event. It's Hiroshi Tanahashi and Jay White. If I had asked you coming out of, well, just what do you see as the outcome here? And do you see Kenny Omega changing this outcome at all? Or do you feel that whoever is winning this match was going to be their direction all along and they're going to stay the course?
I think Jay White being in this position this soon, I still think it's really soon. It took a long time for like some other people. Like Kenny Omega is a good example. He didn't win the world title like immediately after he became a heavyweight. It took him a bit of a while. He had a longer journey. I kind of see that as Jay White's kind of destiny. I can't imagine he's going to headline MSG because I got to think whoever is the champion coming out of next week's Osaka show is going to face the winner of the New Japan Cup because they've got rid of Sakura Genesis on the calendar to make way for the MSG show. So that's going to be the main event of that show is going to be an IWGP title match. And that's my guess. And so I think it has to be like Tanahashi versus either, I don't know, Naito, who might win the New Japan Cup, or Okada. But I think Okada is going to win the G1 this year. So that's why I'm saying that right now. At this point, it could change like as we get closer to the G1. But I don't think Jay White's going to win the belt. I'd be surprised if he did. I just don't think he has enough cachet in Japan or in like North America to like kind of make people think, I'm really excited to see that match. I think if you have like Tanahashi versus Naito or Tanahashi versus Okada as a main event on American soil, people are just going to go like nuts for it and like get really, really excited more than like if Jay White was in the mix.
Yeah, it's not going to surprise me if Jay White wins the title. I think it's ghetto style that when he sees someone that is that he believes in. I think at times it's you do put the title on someone before the public has caught up to that person and has accepted them in the role. I'm with you on the Madison Square Garden front. I don't know what that big match is with Jay White. Other than New Japan could look at it from the standpoint, this is a sold-out show, and we're making a statement on this show that Jay White is our guy moving forward. And the only reason I am more open to this title change is the Wrestle Kingdom outcome really threw me. I thought Okada wins a hard-fought match. Jay White is just he is not at Okada's level yet, but he comes out of it as the promising star of the future. And I almost think that if Okada was losing, it was done for a big reason, for Jay White to go all the way, and you also have that rematch with Okada down the road as well. So it's not going to shock me as much. I won't say I'm completely expecting it, but it just seems like Ghetto is going all the way with this guy and is not going to hit the brakes at the last minute.
Well, I think my big problem with Jay White is that has nothing to do with his wrestling. I think he's an excellent wrestler. My problem is his character, and it always has been. Like, just recently, like, he did the attack on Tanahashi after the Kushida match, and I just thought, what's the point of that? There's no reason to do that, like, because you just have that moment for Kushida, he's leaving. And I made the comment on Twitter, like, I think it feels like he's an overcooked steak. It's like, okay, he's medium rare coming out of, like, the win over Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. But I think Ghetto's like, oh, we need to like cook this just a little bit more. And now it's like, okay, now he's this like cunning heel that beat Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. He played it smart. He didn't cheat, nothing like that. And now he's now like this asshole again that screams too much. And I'm just like not into it at all. Like, I was hoping like we turned a corner with him, for me at least, that he'd be like this more what I envisioned like what his character should be. But it's gone back to like what he was before, which I'm not into at all.
So he's left. This is not a sandwich ranking system. Now we've moved over to steak.
That's right. He's overcooked, John, and they put ketchup on it.
Man. Well, I would say several years ago, he was just your white meat baby face, but he's at least graduated to steak. So he has made some evolution in your meat scale.
Well, dude, I gotta say, like, I preferred him as a babyface in ROH. I thought that guy, bring him to New Japan and let him run wild as a babyface, he would have been like so much more money, I think, than like when they brought him in as a serial killer with all those vignettes, and then he's the guy who likes to play with knives and stuff. I just thought, I don't get it. Anyways, that's a dead horse. I've beaten that so much since last year. I'd be surprised if he wins next week. Let's just say that.
So you believe Tanahashi retains the title and Naito and Okada are your likely candidates for Madison Square Garden. I could certainly see them going with Tanahashi, Okada at the Garden. I could see that very likely happening. But where do you see for... What do you see as Chris Jericho's role in the next 6 months with New Japan? We know that he is able to cut his own deals with New Japan. Whether that includes a show that is co-promoted by Ring of Honor, that's an interesting question that we don't know the answer to. But where does Chris Jericho fit in all of this?
I mean, his big role is to, like, you know, heat someone up, isn't it? That's all he's, like, that's not all he's good for. I want to say, like, the point of hiring him is to get heat on somebody, elevate them, and kind of get their profile higher in the international market, in the U.S. market, like what you did with Kenny, obviously benefited from that 2 years ago. And then like Naito this past year benefited from that. So, but I don't see New Japan like using him that much, because I can't even imagine politically how that would work. If I'm going to say that it seems like maybe New Japan is not going to do anything with All Elite Wrestling. So like Jericho's in a program for the world title, say, and then he wants to do dates for New Japan in around the same time. Okay, you have to lose to this guy. Maybe he says, I can't lose. I'm in this program right now with Kenny, with Pac, with Hangman Page. I can't lose. And they're like, well, we can't let you beat this guy at this time. You beat him already. You need to get his win back, get him over. So I think if I'm New Japan and like I'm looking ahead, I'm like, you're valuable to us. You've been very, very instrumental in helping get our brand out there. But like, we can't like work with you as easily as we did before, because you have these other commitments now to this company.
I guess you look at it from New Japan's side is how they're viewing their own business this year, and how are they beggars or choosers in this scenario? Like, they have lost a lot of talent here to All Elite Wrestling. Do you put the ego portion aside and realize for your own business that we should try and have some kind of working agreement here, or do we just draw the line now and they are running their company, we're running ours, and there's not going to be any crossover?
I don't think New Japan thinks of themselves as beggars of any kind. Like, they'll take the loss on, like, not having certain talents available to them. I think what you see right now with, like, the kind of strengthening of alliances between not only New Japan, but New Japan and ROH, with Rev Pro, with CMML, and then back to New Japan, like, that's the nexus, right? New Japan has the connection with Rev Pro, with ROH, and with CMML. And now through that, they all have alliances with each other, with, like, you know, Rush and maybe Mystico and Dragon League going to work in Ring of Honor while still doing CML dates, with people from Rev Pro like Zack Sabre Jr., the Rev Pro champion, working ROH dates. So I think that leaves, you know, All Elite Wrestling out in the cold, because I don't see, like, the CML connection moving towards All Elite Wrestling. I don't see the Rev Pro connection moving to All Elite Wrestling necessarily. I think they're going to stay with Ring of Honor, which I personally feel is more interesting, because I think all elite guys are kind of like, they've done all they can in New Japan. I'm not really interested in seeing those guys work in New Japan anymore.
You know, to me, is 2019, so much is focused on the All Elite Wrestling talent and how New Japan is going to fill that void and creating new stars. And to me, one of my most pressing issues is looking at Gedo, who has been booking for how long now? 2011, roughly?
I think before that.
Before that. Like, there,
I think,
has
2008, maybe 2009.
Oh, so well beyond what I'm thinking. Like, that is an incredible amount of time that he has been booking, and it's amazing he has not hit that burnout level yet.
I think a lot of it has to do with, like, he does work with Jado. He's not only his tag team partner in the ring, it's the partners behind the scenes. I think Ghetto's the main booker, where, like, I think Jado's maybe more the kind of the detailed guy. He fleshes things out for him, with him. But Jado, by in of himself, is a terrible booker. He nearly destroyed Noah during that jump of Suzuki Gun over to Noah before they came back. The booking there was just absolutely garbage. And I have no faith that Jado could book New Japan by himself without ruining the company, like, into, like, WCW levels, maybe.
Well, I don't know who that person would be if Gedo ever just said, hey, I've hit my limit. I'm giving my 6 months notice now. I need to recharge my batteries. I don't know what the contingency would be. I don't know who that candidate would be next. And to me, that is something that, at the very least, if I'm Harold May, if I'm New Japan, having that succession plan, that knowing that, you know, in this is a company that is built on selling tickets and creating stars. They are very much in the old system of pro wrestling business, that having somebody just working under this guy's wing would be, I think, imperative to the health of this company.
It would have to be one of the wrestlers, because that's how Japan mm-hmm. does business. It's like a wrestler becomes the booker of respective companies. You had that with Baba. You had that with Misawa. You had that with Choshu. And then Liger booked the junior division for a long time. And then, you know, Choshu came back. The period where, like, the Inoki office, that early 2000 periods where there was, like, it was them booking stuff, was, you know, like, the proof's in the pudding. Like, you can see how bad that was. And I think a lot of the wrestlers don't trust office people. They want another wrestler to be the one who's creating their angles and their storylines and the directions that they're going in, because they know what it's like to be a wrestler. I don't know anyone in the New Japan roster who has creative, like, impulses and who's offering what input to Gedo besides, like, what he does himself.
Toru Yano,
who knows? That guy could be a wrestling genius for all we know.
Might be. Maybe.
And he could be the next, he could be the Japanese Paul Heyman for all we know. listen, I was shocked when I discovered that Gedo and Jado were the bookers of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I was like, what? First of all, they're not New Japan Trueborn guys. They didn't come through the dojo system. They came from FMW. They came from through war. So it was like really, really surprising to me when I found out they were the bookers. It could be anyone, John. It could be Yujiro. Yujiro could be like the most brilliant mind in wrestling that we don't know about.
There's always that possibility, yes. Maybe Yujiro will be the guy that takes them into the next decade. We will see. Before we move on too much further, this weekend as well, we've got the New Japan New Beginning US cards as well. So they ran Wednesday night in LA. Then they have Charlotte on Friday night, and they wrap up Saturday night with a card in Nashville. And these cards have been much discussed because of the visa issues. The final night will be headlined by a six-man with Juice Robinson, David Finlay, and Tracy Williams taking on the Best Friends, Chucky T, and Beretta, who look to be wrapping up with New Japan, as well as Rocky Romero in the Chaos versus Lifeblood elimination match in the main event. Plus, you've got Jeff Cobb and Brody King. That should actually be a lot of fun. Marty Scurll, Clark Connors. The Great Okarn versus Harlem Bravado.
Yeah, the Great Okarn. I hope he doesn't bring that gimmick back to Japan. I really don't.
Yes, which I never understand, quite honestly, some of these gimmicks that they get outside and then have to come back and play completely different characters, going back to our Jay White story, where it took him 6 months, I think, really to figure out this Switchblade character, and meanwhile was playing something totally different in Ring of Honor. But That's another rant for another time. These cards are what they are, WH. I don't think on their own, I think these are good shows. The question is, if you had bought tickets in advance and you were excited for a Yuji Nagata, Tomohiro Ishii, there was certainly a letdown factor. And I think across the board, these were not the cards New Japan wanted to present. They were not the cards fans were expecting, but this is the situation they were left with. What were your thoughts on how all of this played out?
Well, I mean, as far as the visa issue goes, that's completely out of their hands. I don't blame them for that. I do blame them for, like, you know, the flow of information and the timing of it. I think it would have served them better to, like, get ahead of announcing the cards and saying, listen, we had planned to bring, like, you know, 5 to 6 Japanese talents to these shows and book matches for you that you were hinting at New Year's Dash. Unfortunately, because of the government shutdown, we couldn't get those visas processed. So, like, Yuji Nagata, Tomohiro Ishii, Hiroki Goto, Jushin Liger, Roppongi 3K can't come. I think those were the big names that were slated to come. Maybe a Young Lion was going to come as well. Who knows? That would have been better. But, you know, the thing is like, that's 6 names that are missing. And yeah, you got lost on the Nagata Ishii match that they hinted at Dash. You lost the Goto Cobb match for the ROH television title, and then maybe interactions with, you know, Roppongi 3K and Jushin Liger with somebody. So you have Harlem Barrado, you have like Tracer X and some other people that aren't normally affiliated with Ring of Honor. But going forward, if this is part of the US expansion, is to do these kinds of like mini tours in conjunction at the same time with like the regular tours, this is what it's going to look like. Like, you take away those, you add those 6 names, this, you're still getting pretty much like 70 to 80% of the card that you were presented for each of the shows, like for Los Angeles, Charlotte, and Knoxville. That's what you were going to get. So like, people who are shitting on these shows, I think to some degree of high percentage of them would still shit on these shows. It's like, where's Naito? Where's Suzuki Gun? Even though like they were very, very clear, like New Japan on their website and all the press release that they did, like those people weren't going to be on these US shows. Anyone who's not booked on the New Beginning shows in Sapporo or in Osaka are the ones who are going to be available for the 3 shows in the United States. So if they do future mini tours, guess what? This is what it's going to look like. It's going to be the B crew. The people who aren't going to be on the Japan shows are going to be sent to the United States. And they could be your favorite wrestlers. They could be wrestlers you don't care about. But you're not going to necessarily get the stars. You're not going to get Naito. You're not going to get Tanahashi. You're not going to get Okada. You're not going to get Jay White. You're not going to get you know, Zack Sabre Jr. per se on these future U.S. tours that they're probably planning. You're going to get ROH predominantly and maybe up to maybe 6 to 10 New Japan guys who aren't booked in angles in Japan.
So if these are kind of the, you know, along with, let's say, 6 to 7 Japanese talents on top of this, what is an American fan's motivation to buy a ticket to one of these shows? Because I would say I'm going to wait. If I'm someone in Toronto, I'm going to wait till Ring of Honor runs their yearly show here. They run twice a year, once with New Japan talent that are going to have bigger New Japan talent. Like, what am I going to see here that I'm not getting? I can go see Ring of Honor. It seems like the big draw is to see Dojo talent that is just, I mean, you're servicing a really hardcore niche that might be curious to see how a Clark Connors is progressing.
There is no incentive unless you're like that big of a fan of the brand itself and you guys say, I got to support New Japan. These are New Japan branded shows. They're not like ROH shows, which maybe I don't care about. I only love New Japan. Then I got to support these shows. And then you're getting like, I don't know, Tai Chi and Takamichi Noku taking on the Briscoe brothers. You're getting Goto defending the ROH world title against Jonathan Gresham. That's what you're going to get in the future. You're
like,
not going to get
watering. That's watering down the brand. That to me, if you can't put on, like, obviously the G1 show at American Airlines Center, you're getting the full New Japan experience. And if you can't do that, to me, it's telling you that, hey, save your money for an All Elite Wrestling. Like, that is what you're competing with. And when someone is choosing with their dollars, like, I don't understand, like, these cards to me, they're not making a footprint in the U.S. market. Yes, you know, these tickets got off to very good sales. But to me, I don't quite understand what these cards are designed to do other than get dates on certain Ring of Honor talent, get some reps in for your Dojo talent, and sprinkle it in with just enough New Japan talent that you can label it as such.
It's publicity, John. It's like so they can run, you know, stories in Tokyo Sports and Weekly Pro Wrestling. Like, oh, we had U.S. shows. Look how important we are. Look how great of a company we are. Like, we're so successful. A lot of it is publicity. A lot of Japanese companies run on this idea that we do things to make ourselves look better, regardless if they're a success or not. It's the perception of it, right? So the perception is that New Japan runs branded shows in the United States. They're like, the press here is like presenting it. It's like, look how, like, they're the biggest company. They're like a global entity now, you know, when ultimately speaking, like the market they care about the most is the Japanese market. I think these efforts are designed more to get the brand out there to, you know, hopefully expand like their subscriptions for New Japan World. Maybe they're trying to get a television deal so they can penetrate the US market that way. I don't know. Like, ultimately, they've never been very, very clear about what their US expansion plans are.
I think it's one that's constantly changing. I don't know if they have and I think the loss of the Elite has probably thrown a big curveball in here. And, you know, certainly on a card like this, where no Kenny, in normal circumstances, this was 6 months ago, we know that Kenny Omega would have been booked, but you probably could have called an audible and at least gotten, you know, a Hangman Page on this show is instantly one of the biggest names on this card.
Yeah, I think if they had a good relationship with them and if, you know, All Elite really, really wanted to like do something with New Japan down the line, they called them and said, hey, can we use Hangman Page? Can we use, you know, the Bucks for one of these shows? Can you do that for us? Like, the Globe Theater would have been like natural for the Bucks because it's in California. But I think that's, you know, telling about maybe the relationship that exists right now between the Elite and New Japan.
That said, I do look forward to seeing some of these. I was told that these should end up on New Japan World, but they're going to be on a bit of a lag, somewhat like the UK shows that they've done, but they are supposed to at some point make their way up onto New Japan World.
Oh yeah, the Charlotte show looks really good. I'm really interested in that one.
Oh, there's a lot of interesting stuff on these shows as well. It all comes down to what you're expecting versus what you're getting. But I think that these all look like entertaining shows. We mentioned Beretta and Chucky T They look to be finishing up this weekend with New Japan. Is this – what level of a loss is this for New Japan? Is this one that is going to be felt?
Well, I mean, Beretta's more of a loss than Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor is basically Beretta's sidekick. I liked him on commentary whenever he did English commentary with Kevin Kelly. I thought, like, he was a real boon there. In the ring, like, he's fine.
How many commentators has Kevin Kelly worked with over the past 12 months? I mean, it's got to be in the double digits.
I think it's like 10 now.
That guy is the chameleon of play-by-play announcers. That guy can just work with anybody.
He can. I don't always think it works, like, as smoothly initially, but he makes it work in the end. I got to be honest, though. Like, I didn't really like Andy Boy Simmons on commentary those last round of shows. Like, he just kind of grated on my nerves after, like, 10 minutes of listening to him, and I switched over to the Japanese commentary.
Did you flip on over to the Lanny Poffo option on New Japan World?
Oh, yeah. I watched one – I think it was the second show I watched in full Lanny Poffo commentary, and I was yelling at my TV pretty much 90% of the time at him. I was like, what are you saying? Don't talk about yourself. You know, I think my favorite was he met Ricky Dozan. I think that was my favorite story of his, though.
He met Ricky Dozan.
Yeah, I think, like, because his father knew him. Like, Angelo Poffo knew or someone. He knew. I don't know if it's true or not, because I don't know if the age is right. He said some egregiously false things that I looked up on the internet, and I thought, is that true? Like, does the timeline work? And I just don't think they were true, like, half the things he was saying. He was kind of, like, just working, like, his coworkers and everyone listening, I think. True carny to the end, I suppose.
Kenta.
But Beretta. Beretta's a loss. Sorry, Beretta's a loss. I'm really surprised that, like, according to, I think it was Dave Meltzer who reported this, that, like,
yes,
he agreed verbally to New Japan, and then I guess he got the offer from AEW, and then he told them, I'm not signing actually with you guys. And apparently they were pretty pissed off about it, which I don't blame them. But, you know, I kind of side with Beretta. Like, if he got a better deal and he doesn't have to fly to Japan every month, then if I'm him, I'd take the deal that's going to pay me equal or more money and not going to have to fly overseas to a different time zone all the time. I think it's a loss. I think if he didn't get injured last year, he would have been pushed really hard in the G1, and he would have had a better spot than he does right now. But ultimately, like, the big foreigners they're going with are Jay White, Juice Robinson, and Zack Sabre Jr. So maybe he saw the writing on the wall for himself this coming year and decided it's a better option for me to get over and make more money in AEW.
Where do you see Michael Elgin fitting into New Japan's plans in 2019? He's just come back from – he was injured. He just worked a show here in Toronto, actually, 2 weeks ago.
I don't know. He hasn't been on any tours, like, since WrestleMania.
Like, he was phased down a lot last year. Had a good G1. I thought he had a pretty good tournament.
I think you have a place for Michael Elgin in New Japan. He is
– I think definitely you do now.
He's a – kind of foreigner that, you know, like, that they traditionally like to book. He's very reminiscent of, like, say, Scott Norton, except, you know, like, a bit better worker, I think. I don't know. Like, I'm surprised.
You think?
Yeah. Wow. There are people who are Scott Norton fans. I don't want to offend them, John. Like, okay. People will be like, listen, Buff Bagwell, Scott Norton was the greatest tag team ever to work New Japan tours. And I'd be like,
I have never stumbled upon the Vicious and Delicious fan club.
Hey, I like that name, though. That was a good name.
It was a good name.
But, yeah, Michael Elgin, I'm surprised he's not working this tour. I'm surprised he's not working these USA shows. I saw on his Twitter, he just said he has big news. Like, he's teasing some announcement. So, who knows? Maybe he's all in with All Elite. Like, I think they probably get along with him. So, why not?
So, Kenta, Hideo Itami, he reportedly gave his notice to the WWE and wrapped up this past week after 205 Live. And it's unknown if he's officially been granted his release yet, but it is expected. And where do you see his destination point? Is it as simple as looking to where he came from and ending up back in NOAH? Or do you see a left field option of where he's going?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is with him is, he, what's his condition like, his physical condition? Can he work a hard Japanese style again.
He's 37 now.
He's 37. Like, you look at his peer, Marufuji. Like, Marufuji has stated, like, he's going to wrap things up pretty much within the next 2 years. He's going to retire. He wants Noah to be at a certain point, like, you know, in terms of the marketplace. And then he says he wants to retire. He just can't take the grind anymore. And, like, you look at Marufuji, his style is, like, he takes a lot of risks. He does a lot of flying. He's not one to shy away from, like, you know, taking massive risks and bumps to get someone else over. And Kenta's the same way. They think the same way. He comes back to Japan. He's going to be like, I got to kill myself to, like, you know, get myself over, get my opponent over, you know, have a good match. So I don't know, like, what his future is. Like, if people, I know a lot of people want him to go back home, back to Noah, but does Noah have the money for it? Like, they just got new owners, but, you know, I think I sent you some information that, like, our friend Jojo Remy compiled, like, this company,
yes.
Lidette Entertainment.
Lidette. Yep.
Yeah. You know, they've been involved in wrestling for a while. They were Sonata's management company when he joined New Japan at first. And they were heavily involved in the DNA brand, under DDT. And, I think he said that they reported about $16.5 million in revenue last year, which is about 35 to 40% of what New Japan recently reported for their revenue. That's not a lot of money. You know, there are, like, stories coming out of Noah all the time that I hear about, like, who's under contract, who gets paid what, and how do they get paid. A lot of those guys are on pay-per-play deals. Like, they get paid for every match that they wrestle. A lot of Japanese wrestlers in Noah, All Japan, a lot of the Joshi promotions, Dragon Gate, a lot of ways that they supplement income if they're not under, like, a full-time, you know, guaranteed contract where they get paid, like, a yearly income, is they have to sell tickets, John. Like, mm-hmm. So the company will give wrestlers a batch of tickets. Go sell these. And that's their payment. That's how they make extra money. So, like, a lot of times when they go to these sponsor dinners, right, their fans will take them out to dinner, and they invite their friends. They bring a wad of tickets with them, and they sell them to the people that at these sponsor dinners. Like, hey, you know, like, Masa, if he was a fan of, like, I don't know, he's a fan of Go Shizaki. Hey, Go Shizaki, let's go out to TGIF. Okay. Guess what? Go Shizaki's going to bring like 10 tickets with him. Hey, Masa, you want to buy all these? Yes, I'll buy all of them. That's how it works in Japan. So I don't see Kenta, you know, I don't know what he was paid in WB. I don't see him coming back working. Like,
he wasn't selling tickets to 205 Live.
Exactly. Tickets. And he's not going to sell fucking tickets to, like, sponsors to try to make extra money. That's not his role. Like, I'm not saying everyone does that. Like, Marufuji doesn't do that. I would be surprised if Marufuji does that. I would be surprised if, like, Nakajima does that. But I'm not going to be surprised if, say, like, Asushi Kotoge does that, or the Ratels do that, or, like, some other maybe lower mid-carders in All Japan have to do that because it's part of their jobs. So if I'm Kenta, like, I'm fielding offers from New Japan, maybe All Japan. They just signed Shuji Ishikawa to a full-time deal. So, yes. Like, if they have money for Shuji Ishikawa and Kenta, like, says, hey, like, what are your options? Like, I can see Akiyama, because he's got the connection with Akiyama, opening up the purse strings, like, yeah, okay, what do you want? We can make that work. You don't have to sell tickets to the sponsors. Okay? That's fine. I don't see him going to Noah. That's my big point. Like, I don't think they have the money to afford him. I think New Japan definitely has the money to afford him. I think All Japan possibly could get the money to afford him. I just don't see, like, Noah having the money, because they're still struggling to fill, like, these smaller spot shows throughout the country. They do okay in Korakuen and, like, you know, Yokohama, but outside of that, it's a big struggle for them to make money, I think.
Yeah, I've got to say, I don't know how Kenta fits in New Japan. It just seems like an odd fit for him, especially at this stage of his career. And I'm very surprised WWE is willing to grant him his release. To me, if I'm Kenta, this has been a disappointing move to North America, where I think he was looking at, hey, I'm young enough that I can still have quite a great run in the U.S. injuries prevented any momentum getting off the ground there. And, you know, it's just been a disappointing 4-year run since signing with WWE that if he wanted to look elsewhere, I wouldn't discount the idea of him wanting to stay over there. I just would be stunned if the WWE would give him an outright release that would allow him to work for a North American competitor.
I think someone confirmed was, I think Sean Ross Sapp confirmed that there's a non-compete for like 30 days. I don't know if they are these things still in like in contracts, like non-compete clauses for 30 days for 90 days.
Usually it's 90 days.
Yeah. So if that's the case, like I can see him like looking at him, like you say, he's 37. He's been plagued with injuries. He's not someone who's ever connected with the audience in the WWE. So I can see them looking at him. He wants his release. He probably told them he wants to go back home. And I don't think they care if he's going to go work for All Japan or Noah. Like, maybe they don't care about if he's working Japan in New Japan. Like, they just don't want him working for AEW or Ring of Honor in North America. But I don't think he's someone that they care about. Like, definitely Dean Ambrose is someone they don't want working for one of their North American competitors. Kenta, I just don't see them caring, to be honest with you.
I mean, look at the levels that they went with Pac before they finally released him. And he was someone that just he just wanted to go to Dragon Gate.
Well, I don't know. Did they know that at the time? Maybe he didn't say that. He just said, I want to leave. And like at the time when he wanted to leave, there was Impact. There was Ring of Honor. That was it. I mean, he could have gone to New Japan. I don't know if he told them what he wanted to do. He just wanted out. I think they wanted to punish him for like the having the temerity of wanting to leave their company. I think the great thing I like about AEW is like they've started this domino effect of like people opening the purse strings and saying, okay, like we want you. This is what we're going to offer you. Even including the WB, they're like stories of they're giving people raises, they're giving people pushes just to keep them happy so they don't leave because it looks bad on them, especially with this impending move to like for SmackDown to Fox. They want to have as much, you know, named talent on there. They don't want to have noticeable competition out there. So I think AEW in the grand scheme of wrestling is a great thing. I'm interested in seeing what their TV is going to look like. I might not watch it necessarily because I can't stand most of the roster, but you know, like there might be things here and there I will watch, but I'm glad that they exist. Because I think they make wrestling interesting from a wrestler's point of view, from, you know, like company-wide, like each company. But especially for fans, John, I love this shit. It's awesome. I love seeing who's going to leave, who's going to stay, who's going where. Like, it's so exciting. Like, I haven't felt this way since, like, all the jumps between WCW and WWF back during the Monday Night Wars.
And the beneficiaries are the talent. Like, that's, like, the... Like, if you are just a rank-and-file WWE talent, like, the worst that can happen to you is that I think the floor on a lot of these downsides are going to be raised, that they just are going to try and keep people happy. Because if you're not, you can go out and whether it's AEW, whether it's you know, New Japan looking to expand, like, you've got real options at the moment. So I think it's the talent that is benefiting from this greatly at the moment, and it's just going to be an arms race this year of all these places trying to secure talent, and then for the next wave of independent talent, that's going to have to fill a lot of spots because guys are going to be signed away, and your MLWs and other groups, your PWGs, AAW, they're going to be searching for the next wave of independent talent that I think you're going to see this system moving very quickly where you're going to see guys that it may have taken them 5 years to get on people's radar. Now that's going to happen in 6 months.
But John, the big question is, who's going to be signing Jack Starrs?
Jack Starrs would be on my short list of – that guy would be on my show every week just Dude. Losing to guys. I thought that guy was awesome this week on NXT UK. Like the perfect squash match with Walter. Like
that guy was awesome.
Oh, he was so great. I was like, this is what this show needs is Walter. And this dude, like you could see, no ego, knew exactly what his job was. Just die for this man and look like he's killed me. And he was fantastic. Jack Starrs was my MVP of the week.
Me too. I got to say, they should give him a contract just for taking that beating from Walter and having his hand imprinted on his pasty white chest.
Oh, amazing. My God. It's instant. It's instant that Walter's hand is just imprinted on this dude's chest. He's pale as all hell. And this chop, like It was just such a perfect squash match. You have to go watch this week with Walter. So Hideo Itami is leaving WWE. Kushida is going to the WWE. Wrapped up this past Tuesday with a main event with Hiroshi Tanahashi, as we talked about. First of all, your impressions of the match. You did not enjoy the post-match angle. I liked it. I thought you still got the Kushida moment at the end. But the actual match itself, what did you feel about an improbable main event between these two? Because I don't know if they would have gotten to this singles match had he not been leaving.
I thought the way they worked the match, which was a lot of like groundwork and working towards submissions, was very interesting. Like to me, like it seemed like there was a message being sent out to the fans and to the office from both guys on Tanahashi's part. It's like, hey, I'm not just this like high impact, you know, dramatic wrestler. I can do wrestling. I can chain wrestle with somebody, not like, you know, Kushida can, but not like Zack Sabre Jr., but he can still hang with Kushida and make it look believable. He has a submission move. He has a Texas Cloverleaf. Like, so I gotta think that this is like a signal that he's like telling the fans, listen, I'm not gonna do the high fly flow every time I win a match. I'm gonna use a submission that is like very, very low strain on my body, low impact on my knees. So I think if he beats Jay White next week, I think there's a very, very good chance he's going to beat him with the Texas Cloverleaf because he's already just established that move in a big win over Kushida. For Kushida, I think he worked a really brilliant match. Like, he didn't try to, like, outpower Tanahashi. He didn't try to, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, out-wrestle him in the sense of, like, you know, try to outmaneuver him or anything. Like, he tried to wrestle him and try to, like, work on, like, taking down his legs and his arms for the hoverboard lock and like trying to negate his high flying moves. So I thought that was brilliant. I think it showed the fans and I think it showed the office like, hey, like you could have put me in a G1. Like I didn't have to win it. I didn't have to get like more than 3 wins, but I could have been in a G1. You could push me as a never champion. I could have done the true open weight face heavyweights and junior heavyweights and not necessarily win, but make it look believable. I think they missed a chance to him on some level. Like at the same time, like I do think like he's done all he could in the junior heavyweight division. And like, you know, people say he couldn't be a believable heavyweight. I don't think he could be a believable heavyweight in the Tanahashi, Okada, Naito sense, but I think he could have been a believable open weight. If you know what I'm trying to say, like if they really pushed that open weight idea with the never belt, he could have been a perfect champion for that kind of a division if that's the direction they want to go with it.
Yeah, I've never been one that gets too hung up on size. Like that's not a big obstacle for me to get over when it comes to believability. And I think that match was a perfect textbook of Kushida. I think he would have assimilated very seamlessly into more of a heavyweight role as well. And just given just where the industry is going, that I think that there's much less of a line now between heavyweights and junior heavyweights, that just the giant 6'5" guys, like that's not going to be your standard main event guys, especially in New Japan. So I feel that Kushida, I don't know. I'm not one that is too optimistic about this career change. You can always be surprised by guys, but I definitely question this move.
If he goes to NXT, I think he has a very good chance of getting over. I think they would utilize him
immediately
to his best strengths. You put him in there with like Kyle O'Reilly and the Undisputed Era. You put him in there with Ricochet, all guys he's had matches, amazing matches with in New Japan. He'll do really well. 205 Live, he'll do well. Just no one will see these matches because no one watches 205 Live. Main roster, I have no hope that he's going to do well. I think he'll probably be saddled as like Nakamura's like buddy or something. They'll give him some stupid gimmick like that. And he's just going to be a jobber to like get everyone else over. So like his best bet is to go to NXT.
I think the best you could hope for on the main roster is like an alliance with Rey Mysterio. They're like a makeshift tag team. You know, put him on TV for a main event one week with Daniel Bryan to really establish him. Like that's kind of, to me, the ceiling of where he goes. But it's, I think it's an uphill battle for him over there. And despite how he looks, not the youngest guy either.
No, like he's what, 30 in his mid 30s? 36, yeah. I mean, like what I would love to see is like they get Tozawa off, you know, 205 Live, and like maybe if they're going to do something, put those two as a tag team. I love the tag team of Hideo Itami and Akira Tozawa, as short-lived as it was. I thought, okay, send them back to NXT and have them work in the tag division. That would be amazing. Like, you know, Tsukishida, it doesn't have to be Tozawa, could be anyone else, but like I think aesthetically, because they're both Japanese, yes, but also like, you know, their gear is similar, their styles are similar, that they would be a really good tag team together. If I was him, I would have just said to New Japan, listen, like, I want to go to ROH. You give me a contract that allows me to work there most of the time, and I'll still do dates in Japan for like Best of the Super Juniors and like big shows. But, you know, and then I like New Japan, like ROH has no problems opening up the purse strings. They got Rush, they got Bandito, they got Haskins, you know, all these people are under contract. Like, I can't believe that ROH didn't make any effort to try to sign Kushida to a full-time contract that allowed him to still work New Japan.
We talked about Noah being sold. You know, I guess we'll see where things go with Noah. Are you expecting wholesale changes here to the promotion with this, or do you see it largely being small, minor changes over the long run?
Well, they said that in March they're going to change the mat from the traditional green to a different
color.
What
an awful idea.
Yeah, I think it's terrible. I think it's just part of their identity. Like, and they said, like, it's to get away from the shadow of Misawa. Like, they want to really move the brand away from being so closely associated with him. But
if you take that away, this is like a minor indie that draws 300 people at most shows. If you take away the Misawa lineage, I think, like, what an awful idea to like take yourself away from that. It'd be like the Toronto Maple Leafs stating, oh, we haven't won a Stanley Cup in so long. It's just such a shadow over us. So you know what? We're going to be the Toronto construction workers, and our new colors are orange and neon yellow.
I would love to see that, John, for the meltdown that would occur. If that happened,
it's just the history is too much. It's too great of a legacy. Has anyone in the history of wrestling ever said, oh, Noah, oh, Misawa's old group? Nobody says that.
No, I don't.
Nobody looks at that as some stain on the pro wrestling Noah name like that. It's so synonymous. Like he was Noah that led these men onto the ark and left all Japan.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's such a dumb idea. Maybe I don't even know what color they're going
to sacrilege. Like, that's what it is. It's sacrilege.
Just going to make it, what, a white mat? I don't know. That's so boring. Like people are saying, well, you know, All Japan changed it from that. You remember the old All Japan design was like a cross section of one side was blue, one side was red. When they got rid of that, people apparently like freaked out, but they got over it. But this is completely different. As far as the booking goes, like Kiyomiya retained his title over Kitamiya this past week. And I think the 50 Funky Powers, Quiet Storm and Muhammad Yone beat the Hooligans. And they're coming out with a storyline where Takashi Sugiura is like really tired of the Hooligans bullshit, which is probably echoing the sentiment of all the fans. And him and Akitoshi Saito are going to take on the Hooligans in a tag match. And if they win, the Hooligans have to disband. But if Sugiura loses, he has to become their slave, which sounds like a horrible fucking idea.
Welcome to the new Noah.
And Marufuji challenged Kiyomiya for the next title match, which I think is in Yokohama.
Did they announce a date for that?
Let me check here.
Is this for March?
This is for March, yeah. I think it's for the Yokohama show in March. And the other big news that I'm really excited about is that Asushi Kotoge is going to challenge for the tag titles with Eddie Edwards is coming back to Noah, yes, which I'm very excited about, John.
I hope he brings his Impact character so you can get up to date on what he's been
doing.
His kendo stick, Kenny.
I don't want to see hardcore Eddie Edwards. I want to see wrestling Eddie Edwards. I don't want to see this bullshit skinny jean wearing, backwards cap hat wearing goofball that talks to his kendo stick and is having marital problems. Leave that shit at Impact. bring proper wrestling tights, Eddie Edwards back to Noah, and I'll be happy.
Did you miss the week where he broke out of the insane asylum and he ran into the Impact Zone in a gown?
John, I don't watch Impact outside of, like, you know, LAX matches and, like, the Rascals. I don't watch Impact at all.
Well, he is going through a character transformation now, where Eli Drake is trying to pull him away from the hardcore wrestling style and get him back to the old Eddie Edwards. So maybe the storyline will coincide with him coming back as the old Eddie Edwards when he goes to Noah next.
Well, the thing is you know, Kotoge's character is crazy, right? He wears the cape and he's like runs around. And he's saying he's a revolutionary hero for what? I don't know. I don't know if he's part of the Yellow Vest movement over in France or anything like that, but you know, like he wears a cape. I don't usually like goofy shit in Japanese wrestling, but I have to say I really love Kotoge's cape gimmick. So I'm a little worried that, you know, Eddie's going to kind of try to match Kotoge's crazy character by bringing, you know, hardcore Eddie Edwards over to the green ring, or soon not to be green ring in Noah.
A topic you wanted to discuss. We've got a few more here. Women's wrestling in New Japan. This has been discussed heavily over the past month. You give us your perspective on this and New Japan's decision not to have female wrestling talent.
I don't think it's actually an active decision that they make. They just never had women's wrestling on their shows, like as a, like having a full-time division. They've had like exhibition matches on their shows, but my perspective and my opinion about this whole debate, and I don't think it's a ridiculous debate. I think it's worth talking about because, like, you know, women's wrestling has grown so much worldwide in North America, in Europe, and has always been a big thing in Japan. But my feeling is this: if tomorrow New Japan had a press conference and they said, we're going to start a women's division, not right now. What we're going to do is we're going to open up a dojo for women's wrestlers to come. We're going to recruit them from collegiate wrestling teams, from, you know, different athletic backgrounds, and we're going to train them for a year. And we're going to hire like one or two freelance women out there. I would pick like Hiroyu Matsumoto, who is in the Mae Young Classic this past year. I would pick another indie wrestler, would be like Hikaru Shida. She's really good. Like, so those two, they're the trainers, and they're going to be part of the roster when it debuts within a year's time. When we give it, and in that time, we're going to figure out how we're going to integrate this division into our cards. We're going to come up with ways to create maybe their own tournaments, and like they're going to have their version of the G1. We're going to have titles for them. We're going to have a singles title. We're going to have a tag team title for this women's division in New Japan. If that's what they said tomorrow, I would have absolutely no problem with that. Because what I don't want to see is them poaching from existing Joshi groups in Japan, because I think you'll find that most Joshi wrestlers don't feel like they need to go to All Japan, New Japan, Noah, DDT. And here's the other thing. I think a lot of people who are like, you know, get angry about the fact that New Japan doesn't have a women's division. They don't take into account that there is a rich history of all women's promotions existing in Japan for many, many, many years. And for the most part, they are successful on their own without having the need to be attached to one of the bigger promotions, like that are traditionally men's promotions.
Yeah, I think that you'd be astounded to know how many, like, how many Joshi promotions there are in operation at the moment. And, you know, even looking at something that if New Japan were, as you said, to announce, you know, the opening of a dojo, like what would the long-term effects be on talent that would go through that system? And that is how you get into wrestling. If you're a female, is going through that dojo system, that inevitably it would become very difficult to have talent for all these other companies. And yeah, there's many that, yes, if New Japan wanted tomorrow to grab all of this talent, there is that concern. Like, what effect would that have? It would be very much like the WWE in the territorial days taking away a lot of big stars for their national promotion and the impact it would have on those territories.
Here's the other thing, John, like, from your point of view, like, you look at the WWE, you go to like any shows that feature women's wrestling. You think the audience is just the same, right? Like for men's wrestling and for women's wrestling, the audience is completely the same in North America?
I would say so, yes.
Okay. So I'm going to relate a story to you that I think is going to illustrate the point I'm going to make now. So on January 3rd, I was hanging out with Chris Harrington, who was formerly of the WrestleNomics podcast and is now affiliated with All Elite Wrestling. We had like contact.
Wait, they didn't sign you, did they?
He was trying to recruit me. But I said, listen.
To design ring gear?
I said, listen, I got a prior commitment to post-wrestling. If you can match stickers and a hat, maybe I'll sign. And they couldn't match it, John. So you get to keep
me. That big AEW money.
That you get to keep me, John. Like, they weren't opening the purse strings up for me, unfortunately. But it's okay. So we went to two shows. We went to Cork and Hall for the All Japan show featuring a match we're going to talk about a little later, Kai and Kento Miyahara. And then one of the things Chris said to me was, you know, there's a lot of women at this show. And I go, uh-huh. And he's like, there's more women at this show than I would normally see at an indie show in the States or at maybe a major WWE show. Like, there's a lot of women here. He's like, yeah. Also Jojo Remy was there. And we were both like, yeah, this is normal. But there's a lot of women at wrestling shows. He goes, How is it for New Japan? And we're like, yeah, there's more women at New Japan show. And it's like, is this normal? It's like, yeah. But like, All Japan has a lot of women. New Japan has a lot more women in the audience. Toriyama and Dragon Gate is the ones who started all this, have a lot of women at their shows. And then later, we went to Shinkiba First Ring, and where we watched Stardom. And he beforehand, Chris asked me, hey, is the audience the same? Is it all the women at the Joshi show, at the Stardom show? And I was like, yeah, you know what? You'll see for yourself. And then we get there. He's like, there's no women here. I go, no. Maybe it was full. So I'm going to say, and there's a lot of foreigners there, John. So like a lot of, there were women, foreign women there. But if we were talking about Japanese women, I'm going to say out of like 300 people, there's like maybe five like women who are like natives who go to these shows regularly. It's a very, very small percentage. Joshi attracts men, predominantly men from the ages of, I'm going to say 25 to like 60 as their core audience, as the people that they're drawing from. New Japan, All Japan, you know, DDT, and like Noah, it's predominantly men, but I'm going to say the ratio is more closer to 55 to 45. Like, it's not exactly half, but it's not like a big gap. So these people who complain about New Japan having no women on their roster, listen, the marketplace for Joshi wrestling, for women's wrestling in Japan, is completely different from men's wrestling in Japan. And the other thing is that, like, there's one company that has their own dedicated women's division. That's DDT. They have Tokyo Joshi Pro Res. And the thing is that that's a separate group. They bring, like, talent from Tokyo Joshi Pro Res into DDT shows for, like, their Sumo Hall show, for, like, some of their, like, bigger Korakuen shows. But they don't bring the whole roster over. They don't divide the shows into half. It's like maybe two or three matches on a 10-match card is like are dedicated mm-hmm. to Joshi wrestling. So this is not the culture where you kind of want to impose your values, like Western values, onto like their culture. For one thing, the women don't want it. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say probably most Joshi wrestlers don't want to be integrated into like fully into a mainstream men's promotion. They like being stars of their own promotions and really controlling their own destinies for the large part.
Do you think that New Japan is missing something specifically for their US cards by not going that direction?
No, I don't think. I've never heard like a significant portion of New Japan fans on social media talk about wanting to see women on their shows, not because they hate women's wrestling, but because they can see women's wrestling on their own. Like, here's the thing. Stardom's going to do a show during Mania weekend in New York City, right? That show hasn't sold. I think that show's already sold out.
I think it sold out right away, if I'm not mistaken.
I think if they did two shows, both that a second show would sell out easily, you know, like, because I think what they should do if they want to do that is work in conjunction with a Joshi promotion, then say, like, can we want to bring like six Joshi wrestlers, not necessarily from Stardom, could be from like Sendai Girls, could be from Marvelous, could be even from like Oz, whatever, like out, like, or like some freelancers, and say, let's just have some exhibition matches on our shows. But no, I don't think they're missing out on anything, because I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I think most US fans are just happy to support the brand, as is evident by these like three shows that are happening this weekend. So no, I'm not opposed to, like, if New Japan wanted to do it. I don't think they have to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's wrap up with just a few final ones here. We've got the Giant Baba Memorial Show. That's coming up on February the 19th. They have not announced if this is going to be airing anywhere. Oh, do you have any insight into this WH?
I think they're airing it on NTV and on Samurai.
Okay.
So I will be able to see these, and I'll get you a copy of it at some point.
Wink, wink.
This is not nefarious at all. Like,
no, you know? No, this is all on the up and up. So let's – I won't go through the whole card here, but the – headliner, we've got Hiroshi Tanahashi and Yoshitatsu, who I think we know what his role in this match will be, versus Kento Miyahara and Daisuke Sakamoto. And, man, do you think they can follow Mil Máscaras and Dos Caras?
Against Kazahashi and Nosawa? I don't know. Like, I don't know if, like, Tanahashi's on a level of Nosawa.
This is a wild show, by the way. Like, this is an eclectic mix.
Dude, there's, like, Mara Fuji and Jinsei Shinzaki taking on Masaki Mochizuki and Shin Skywalker from Dragon Gate. That's going to be crazy. Yeah, this is a wild card. The main event is...
Atsushi Onita's on this thing in a tornado bonkhouse deathmatch.
I think that's a typo. The copy I have has bunkhouse, but I'd rather see a bonkhouse match. Yeah, that's the participants. Onita's in that. Hideki Suzuki. Kendo Kashin. Great Kojika, who's like 70 years old. He's the owner of Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Shiji Ishikawa, Mitsuya Nagai, Hikaru Sato. That's a weird match.
Man, I'm looking for Ishikawa and Onita. Just to see those two lock up, that'll be something.
But, dude, the three-way tag match, Sanada and Bushi taking on Jake Lee, Koji Iwamoto, and Shota Umino and Ayata Yoshida. Holy shit, that's going to be amazing.
This six-man, I mean, we're going to get Nagata and Akiyama in there together. It's Akiyama, Takeo Mori, and Taiokea versus Kojima, Nagata, and Osamu Nishimura. That could be fun.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Just with some of the Akiyama, you know, Akiyama in there with any of those guys should be entertaining.
It's Nishimura reuniting with, like, his New Japan guy, because he used to be a New Japan dude. So it's going to be a good show. Like, I love
whenever they do stuff like this. Like, these just... dream scenarios, or just, you know, guys that you just never think you're going to see some of these combinations and stuff. Like, this will be a very fun card.
Dude, Tanahashi and Miyahara. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to see them interact with each other. I think it'll be amazing.
Yeah, I'm scanning this Giant Baba Memorial Battle Royal with special referee Mighty Inoue.
Yeah, that looks horrible, actually. That would be like, if I was going to this show, I'm not, unfortunately. It's on a Monday, so I can't go because I have to work. But if I was going, and like, I'd probably be going with JoJo. He said,
it's on a Tuesday. It's on a Tuesday.
Is it? I still can't go. I got to work. Oh. I think I tell JoJo, hey, we can stay longer at the Tonkatsu restaurant in Ryugoku, but we don't have to go to the Battle Royal necessarily. Yeah, it's a very interesting card. The six-man tag team match after the Battle Royal, Yuma Aoyagi, who's an All-Japan wrestler. He's in Next Dream with Naoya Nomura. He has this, like, kind of weird storyline going on with Taichi. I think he did some Lion Gate shows, and, like, Taichi beat him up in those shows. And, like, every time they can get these two on, an independent show, they try to book them, like, together in a match. And it's one of, like, JoJo's favorite storylines in all of Japanese wrestling. And I gotta agree with him. It's very intriguing. At some point, Yuma Oyagi has to beat Taichi, maybe for the Intercontinental title. And then that will begin the crossover of All Japan and New Japan again, maybe.
Will the magician gimmick result in Taichi disappearing?
With the title?
Maybe.
Yeah, he'll sell it like to pay for his alimony or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, you and I should definitely watch this show, and then we'll chat about it the next time we do a show together.
Yes, for sure.
This is the one, we got to review this show. One thing I want to ask you about, because I just want some more details on it. I know kind of the bits and pieces of it, but Taka Michinoku's he finished up with Kai and Tai Dojo amidst a scandal. Can you just inform everyone what exactly went down here that led to Taka Michinoku leaving K Dojo?
So K Dojo is his company that he formed when he came back to Japan after he left WWE, and like it's a training school as well as being a small promotion in of itself. So he's a freelancer for New Japan. He's not a New Japan contracted wrestler. He's in there through his relationship with Minoru Suzuki, who is legit one of his best friends and, you know, is, you know, takes care of him and brings him along to pretty much every promotion he works in since the time they worked together in All Japan Pro Wrestling. So there's many tabloid magazines in Japan, John. You know, and one of them is called, I think, Flash. And Flash broke the story that Taka Michinoku was having extramarital affair with some young lady who apparently was quoted as saying that he is, quote, a groovy gentleman. That was the English translation that I saw. What that means, I don't want to speculate. I'm not going to speculate. Like, leave that up to what you want to think groovy gentleman means.
Maybe it's just he's a fun date.
Sure.
Likes to go cosmic bowling.
Yeah, maybe in the soon-to-be-closing Hakata Star Lanes, he likes to take her bowling there.
What a wonderful tie-in.
This is something that's embarrassing to K-Dojo because he's their founder. He's on the board of directors. He's the head trainer of their school, which has produced some amazing talent, like most notably recently Ayato Yoshida, but there's also like people like Yuji Hino is one of his trainees. Kengo Mashimo is one of his trainees. He also trains a lot of women, including a young, very good up-and-coming young Joshi wrestler named Ayami Sasamura. Keep an eye on her in like different Joshi promotions. So it's a big loss to them. He didn't get any like penalty from New Japan, it seems, because he's not a contracted wrestler. When Taichi went through the same thing, he was caught having an affair. New Japan docked his pay and they kind of punished him, suspended him for a short time. And then they brought him back pretty quickly. I can see this not lasting with Taka. Like, I can see them bringing him back, but his punishment was like, he was going to be paid for a year and, he was kicked off the board of directors of K-Dojo. And, it was funny because like a couple of months earlier, he put out a tweet saying to like different wrestling promoters in English, he said, please don't ask me to work your shows. Don't make me offers because I don't want to fly. I don't want to leave Japan. I just want to work in Japan. And then after his pay got suspended for a year, he went on Twitter and he said, hey, are there any US or UK promoters who want to book me? I'm open to flying to your shows now. So it's pretty serious that he's going to, you know, get over his aversion to traveling by plane to go to these countries now that he didn't want to do shows for like a month or two before. But in the long run, I think this was too much for him, maybe. And he just said, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to devote myself full time to probably New Japan and then working freelance shows for like maybe smaller promotions like DDT or probably All Japan. Anyone who New Japan doesn't have a big problem with.
Right. So you see him doing a lot more dates now as a result of this.
I see him
in the ring.
What I would hope is that like Zach gets him to go to like the UK with him and becomes his hype man over there as well in RevPro. And like if they go to like work for like what is that, White Wolf Wrestling over in Spain, bring Taka along, get him some matches there, and then like he does your introduction in Japanese in Spain. That'd be awesome, dude.
Could be. I think he's great in that role with Zach. I think that that's such a great act that those two have together.
I think it would translate very well into like outside of Japan, like in the UK, in ROH, like if like Zach brings Taka and Taka just does his ring introduction instead of Bobby Cruz, and in Japan and Japanese, completely in Japanese, I think it would be such a fun aspect to Zach's like character and his whole act.
My final question, excluding Wrestle Kingdom, because there were some big candidates there. Did you have a match of the month and a performer of the month for January?
I'm going to say there's two. So the match of the month is Kento Miyahara versus Kai for the Triple Crown on January 3rd at Korakuen Hall. I thought that match was as good as any of the top four matches of Wrestle Kingdom. I thought it was better than Jericho Naito. I'm not going to say it was better than the main event, but I'm going to say it's close to being as good as Okada Jay White. And if I have to watch it back still on tape, I was there live for it, but maybe it's going to edge out Okada versus White for me when I watch it back. Here's the thing.
I can see it being at that level when you watch it. Like it's, and to me, my biggest takeaway, Kyohei Wada is the best referee in wrestling, period.
Yes.
Just the best big match referee.
When they announced this match on, no one thought, like, including myself, no one thought Kai had any chance of winning the Triple Crown. But my God, like, I'm watching this, I'm there live, and there are points, there are at least three different points where I thought he's going to win the belt. That's amazing. That's pro wrestling at its finest, John. So these guys worked their match perfectly, where I thought, or I deluded myself into thinking that Kai was going to become the Triple Crown champion and beat Kento Miyahara. So my hat's off to Kai. He's my performer of the month because he worked the best match of his career so far. He made me believe that he would actually win that belt when I knew, front of my mind, back of my mind, middle of my mind, that he had no business ever holding that belt, but he made me believe that he could possibly win it at least three different times in that match. So kudos to him.
Yeah, and Miyahara's next title defense is February 24th against Suwama, and that same card has Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Okabayashi defending the tag titles against Ryoji Sai and Jake Lee on the All Japan card.
That's going to be a banger. Did you watch the title change, the Violence Giants against Strong BJ?
I haven't seen the match yet, no, but I've heard people rave about it. That's on the list.
John, do you like big boys wrestling and hitting each other really hard?
I know I'm going to enjoy this. I know, like everyone has raved about this match. Some saying it was better than the match with Miyahara and Kai. So we will see.
We'll see. I wouldn't say that, but it's pretty good. I do highly recommend it.
So level the expectations. All right. I am planning to watch that one. All right. That's going to wrap up the show for this month. But I want to give a big shout out to WH's excellent piece that we have up on the website right now, profiling the top 10 Japanese wrestling venues that he has attended. It's called Journey to the Center of Puroresu. And this thing is phenomenal. It has drawn great praise from everybody that has read it. It is up on the main page at postwrestling.com. WH, you might be the breakthrough writer of the year in 2019. You are putting together some phenomenal work.
Oh, thanks, John. It's it's something I like to do. I like to think about things that interest me about wrestling, and if it catches my imagination enough, I'll try to put it to paper. And this came along really well because, I was just thinking about, I told you before, I had the bucket list of places I want to go. And I was able to fulfill that bucket list for the most part last year. There's a couple of places now that I'm trying to go to this year. Like, one is Osaka Joe Hall. If people are wondering, what about Osaka Joe Hall? I haven't been there yet. Shinjuku Face, I haven't been there yet. So those are the two big places I want to go to. Dominion.
KBS Hall in Kyoto. Like, this thing just looks beautiful.
It's amazing. And the thing is, John, it's if you see it from the outside, it's where is this gorgeous cathedral that this arena is in? It's it's this building right here. It's this two-story building that looks the North American offices of Xerox, the Tron office of Xerox. It's right here. Really?
Yeah. I know it wasn't your number one, but it was the photo I had to use for the main photo.
Oh, yeah.
It's breathtaking.
By the way, all those photos, except for the exception of one photo, all those photos are mine. I took all of those photos. So
look at you covering our ass.
Don't at me and say, hey, give me credit. There's one picture, I'm not going to say which one it is, but if there's one picture that someone says, that's my picture, let me know. I will credit you.
These are beautiful photos. Great article. I just want to give everyone mention to go check that out. I loved reading this. I love reading about arenas and venues. And yeah, you did a really great job of just describing all of them. It's made this highly probable trip to Japan. Like, this is I want to make it to, like, at least two of these for sure.
Shinkiba?
We'll see. You know better than me of what's doable in a short amount of time there. I mean, I do love your rundown of the Tokyo Dome. Like, all right, it's the Tokyo Dome. It's fine. You could do better.
It's not my favorite place to watch wrestling, John.
I don't blame you. I'm not a fan of big stadiums. Like, your description of me, it's like the Sky Dome, which is my only comparison. It's like, it's this big giant warehouse. There's no ambience to it inside. It's just a big giant stadium. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed shows at, Cops Coliseum more than I've enjoyed shows at the Tokyo Dome. I mean, the matches are good, and that's why it's on the list. It's Tokyo Dome. It has to be on the list. And it's hosted so many amazing matches that I've seen live. But it's not the most enjoyable experience. Like, the most enjoyable experience is Korakuen Hall. John, if this trip comes, I'll take you. We can do, in one day, we can do Korakuen Hall and we can do Shinkiba. The thing is,
oh boy.
I will make sure we don't see a death match at Shinkiba, because we will just be covered in glass light tube. And I don't want that. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for me. So we'll go see like Joshi, or we'll see All Japan or DDT at like Shinkiba if we can.
Well, I'll tell Wei that we need the full experience, and we'll send him to the deathmatch show and he can report back.
He
to
can
us.
Take his nephew.
His nephew would love it.
I remember he said his nephew loves deathmatch wrestling.
He did. He's like, he's not a wrestling fan, but he loves deathmatches.
But John, so. If we can see a big Japan show like at Korakuen, we should definitely do that.
Hey, I'm in. Like, when I'm going, like, this is very much, it's a wrestling trip, so I am down for all of it.
We can hang out with Dave at Totokan. I heard he really loved going there.
Yeah, well, I've heard. I had some other friends there who went there, and it was just, yeah, if you've never been there, it just sounds like wrestling heaven if you're a collector of any sort.
Definitely. Mouth would love it. Mouth would go nuts there.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's going to bring an end to this this lengthy show. WH, always great doing these shows with you. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll chat about the Giant Baba Memorial card and whatever else is going down and where Kenny Omega ends up. What is your wild prediction, WH?
He's going to find his phone in Jacksonville. Is that where the press conference
Vegas.
Is? In Phoenix.
Vegas.
Vegas. Okay. He's going to show up in Vegas, find his phone, and say, hey, it's in Vegas. I thought I left it outside the Tokyo Dome.
How about this? Does Kenny Omega wrestle one match for New Japan in 2019? One match?
No. If he's with AEW... or WWE by some stretch of the imagination. No, I don't think, unless it's on U.S. soil, unless it's Madison Square Garden, if he somehow gets his way onto that show, which I don't think he will, I don't see him wrestling for New Japan this year.
Well, that will probably be the big news coming up next week, is Kenny Omega's landing spot. For WH Park, I am John Pollock. You can follow WH at WH Park 9. That is the number 9. And go check out all the latest news at postwrestling.com. Wei Ting and I will be back on Sunday, and we're going to be going through the new beginning cards that are going down this weekend in Sapporo. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the King of Sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.